Good evening. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday evening. We're here at the Institute in California, and we are in the midst of the ABD, and we have two guests from out of town. You'll know them as Gnostic Man on my left, and on my right is Laura Lila.
Laura Lila.
Aww.
Close. No cigar.
No cigar.
No cigar.
Wait a minute. I was pulling a cigar and all this stuff here, but not tonight. But they're visiting, and they've been here for a few days, and they will be heading out in about 20 minutes or so. And I thought I'd take this opportunity to investigate a question that doesn't naturally come up. Is Star Ananda on? Okay, good. And if you had an opportunity to read to go on to the wingsofchaos.com website under the ABD, you're going to see a little notation called The Last Hours of Life. And both Gnostic Man and
Laura Lila
have posted some wonderful posts there along with about 9 other people. And if you actually take the time and you read through those in sequence, doesn't matter what order, I encourage you to do that. And if you have comments for the poster, it helps them orient a little bit. And Susan, you've also put yours up there, right?
Yes, I have a couple of postings.
She has parts 1 through 20 or 30, I think. I can't remember. Or at least 3 or 4. But what you'll be moved. You'll be moved by the authenticity of these individuals, taking a moment kind of in of being totally open and answering the question, how would I like to design the last hours of my life? And how was that experience for you? Just the experience of writing it.
It was challenging emotionally.
It was challenging emotionally. What can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, when I started out, I gave a kind of an ideal answer that I would die quietly and happily in my sleep, a widow, so that my husband wouldn't have to grieve me, and there would be it would be an easy passing.
And she actually had that's the first part of her, which she wrote down. And then
I said, well, you know, becoming more realistic that I would like to die at home without anything artificial keeping me going, but whatever was necessary for my, the term I know you guys use is terminal midwives. But, and if I could hear the directions through the bardos read to me, that would have something that, and if it could be in my husband's voice, in Jerry Gnostic Man's voice, that would be very meaningful to me too. But it would also mean he had outlived me. And I grieved to think of his sorrow.
And that's part of what I want to capture, is that surprise in a certain way. Because when I read through everybody, I've read through these and you know, help people, edit them a little bit and things like that. And I hear that particular point, and it's quite moving to me. And I was wondering, Jerry, if you wanted to comment on that as well. Let's just speak into there.
Sure. Well, when I began to reflect what the actual time of my death would be, it seemed that leaving before Gail, leaving before my wife, and knowing that she would feel how she would feel about that, it just was very hard to accept. And so, you know, on the one hand, I felt guilty because I thought, I'm too attached to something in this world. I shouldn't be there. But it nevertheless was just another illusion that I'm attached to. But it still was emotionally really powerful. And it seemed like you know, I felt that it would be better for me to outlive her. And
we'll have to live forever.
Didn't you just say that?
Yeah. You know, so, yeah.
Comment?
One of the issues with looking at your last hours is that you are projecting from where you are now into where you assume you might be then. What might work easier for you is if you would bring the last hours into the now rather than trying to put yourself into the then. It's just a suggestion. Make the last hour this one. If I was to die in this hour.
If you read through the last chapter, Practical Work on Self, called The Last Hour, the suggestion there, very simply, the suggestion is, if I were to die this hour, what would it be like? And the chapter begins very evocatively, EJ begins to talk about who are the people that seem to grab the most out of life? Who are those people that seem to grab the most out of life? The terminal patient.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we meet maybe we're at the bedside of a friend who's a terminal, and they're enjoying the scent of the room and the sound and the incense. They just, with such verve, they're just eating it up. And in the chapter, he says, as if it were, they take in impressions as if it were a gourmet meal. But.
Well, in the times, I must say that I have been at the side of loved ones as they died. There wasn't too much of that going on. It seemed like it was a much more placid, difficult.
Okay.
You're talking about the experience of observing how another is going through the process of dying and the actual physical manifestation of dying, right?
So I'm not having their internal experience.
You're not only not having... Oh, thank you. Yes. You're not having their internal experience. You're having an observation which is colored by your relationship to the one who is dying. So your dynamic with that person that's going through the dying mode is also part of your experience of observing. One of the aspects of dealing with death or dealing with those who are dying is to remove yourself from the personal experience that you feel in order to allow the death experience to be the only thing happening in the room. That's the dynamic you wish for, is to be one with the experience. And that's when it's your loved one, that's the hardest part. Especially what you guys have just described. You're just describing exactly the pinnacle thing, which in relationships seems to support you and hold you back at the same time.
But we are in the position that we are in now.
Yes, we are.
So that's the starting point from which we launched this particular voyage. We're in the middle of uncovering this fruit called the American Book of the Dead. And as we delve into it, we begin it from where we are. This is where we are. And one of the common threads that I hear a lot is exactly what the two of you are saying. What's it going to be like for my spouse go. I'm so concerned about that. So all of this investigation as we go through, and we're going to unfold that a lot more in the coming weeks, when we get into the actual chambers, we're going to see that's where I get caught. Because the corollary question here, of course, is, well, how then do I get ready? Because it's been also said to me a number of times, some people with in a very profound manner, they'll say something like, and these are individuals that are not in mentation, but are actually wrestling with their body at a level of end game. And they'll say, I'm not ready to die. It's the same thing. There's the same thing. What's my spouse going to do when I die? It's like kind of like we can intellectualize the idea, well, it's okay if I die. I'm kind of ready to die. Like I wrote in the email, I don't know if anybody saw it, but my grandmother, when she was in her 90s, she came to my mother, and she said to my mother, she says, I'm tired. I'm ready to go. But I think God forgot me. Well, that's not, it's like, people kind of like acquiesce, I'm going to die, I'm okay, I've lived long enough, I'm ready to go. That's not what I mean by, is it possible to be dynamically ready in that moment of transit? And I maintain that it's a possible, I just want to maintain a particular premise out here that I'll put, is that if we have got to a certain point of dynamism with regards to that series of transits will go on at that point, do we not help free our spouses?
Say that in another way, please, David.
Okay. So the core question is, what will it take for me to be ready to die?
In what way is it possible for me to make it so that I am ready to be in the dying process? How can I make myself
in the moment? Talk into this.
Oh, okay,
you
talking
hit,
into
you
that.
You hit that and then turn it off.
Okay, get it? That one? Okay, so the question is, how can I...
No, closer to you.
Well, then it's this.
No.
No? Okay. How can I make it possible for myself to be ready to be part of the dying process so that I am engaged in the dying process, not resisting the dying process? In what way may I prepare myself? In what way am I willing to participate in the dying? So I always like the in how may I or in what way may I, because I need the specifics.
Okay, so when you can just hold it.
Okay.
There's also a possibility that there may be a passive, like giving up too. Like people will fight the moment, argue, or there's also a giving up. Now, I'm saying that there's a middle path, and that's the opportunity I think we have here. And what I'm trying to say, Pat, is that if we can do a particular kind of work ourselves, that we have the opportunity of helping free our spouse, our loved one.
David, you are breaking up seriously.
Can you hear me now, Harry?
No,
it's pretty bad.
Okay. On the phone, it's pretty bad?
Yes.
Okay. Is that off?
Yeah.
Well, you may not get a good recording is all. Is it coming across okay on the computer? Is it? Okay. So I think the fundamental question that the ABD as a piece of literature raises for us is, What will it take to be ready? Now, and I guess I'm trying to qualify my question as to ready.
Yes.
Okay. I'm saying not fight it, not go past it, but is it possible to create a dynamism of the middle path?
Would that be surrender?
Well, surrender, but that's the big S there, okay?
Okay, well, I didn't mean just because surrender often is taken to mean give up, but there's a relaxing, a letting go that comes with surrender.
Yeah. Responding to the idea that it's possible to have a preparation that I do that makes it easier for my loved ones. That's the premise you're proposing, right?
No, I'm not proposing that that's the purpose.
No. That's one of the premises you're proposing, that there is a way that in preparation we can make it possible for it to be a successful letting go for the spouse or the loved one also. Is that how we're...
Well...
I'm not clear on your question.
I think that what we're seeing identified is there we're seeing human hooks being identified. And I'm seeing it throughout a number of the writings that people have put in.
Yes.
And if it's not about the spouse, it's about my child, you know, or whatever. It's because there's an immense emotional bond, which may go beyond the simple human family type thing. It may be karmic bond. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. What I'm saying is that we have. Okay, so I'm just saying that that's there. And I think the Voyager that we're seeing written in these testimonies, the Voyager is declaring the fact, hey, that's going to be a big one. I think we're seeing a point of declaration that that is an issue. As we go through the rest of the book, we're going to go through 49 chambers and a bunch of other stuff, and some people are going to recognize right? All I'm trying to recognize now is somebody is beginning to bring those out.
One of the tools that I have is the ABD in preparation. I was able to be at my father's deathbed, read for him. And after the clear light, I had the sense when I would go to do the readings that he was already there waiting for me. And there was such a clear connection, a continuity of consciousness, that it shifted something in me so that I don't have the same kind of doubts that I had before that, because it was so clear that we were still in communication, and in some ways it was deepened and even more profound. So that's one of my tools.
Go ahead with the comments, Susan.
Okay, we do have comments. Simon said, would that be numbing you?
Who said this?
Simon.
Would what be numbing you?
Well, of the feelings of the situation. But at the same time, there is your subjective and projections over death of the loved one.
Speak into the phone, please.
Could be really objective without losing our feelings.
Okay.
Good
kind
time,
of choppy.
Go ahead. Do you want to?
No, that's
okay.
We should hear some more.
Go ahead with some more comments.
Okay, Star Ananda. I experienced going into one of the... Hello?
Yeah, speak into the phone, and it's very clear when you do.
Okay, I'm speaking right into it. Is it good now? Okay, so Star Ananda. I experienced going into one of the healing radiations during a light sleep last week. I was told what time this would take place. When it began to happen, I was not ready. I had one more thing to do. I was unable to do that thing. The cleansing radiation started at the exact time that I had been told. The radiation was scary at first, and then it was very healing, and I had an extreme sense of peace. I was actually trying to convey that to my children, that I was actually okay. Then I woke up.
Good. Very good.
Mark Circa. I went to a family member's funeral. Being around the corpse was great. A real weird higher feeling. But unfortunately, I couldn't hang around there long, as a line of people wanted to cry and tell stories of how much love, etc. But I'm being kind of a jerk. He goes on and says, I just hoping that I wouldn't think of funny stuff and start laughing or thinking of what the non-human parts of them are going on.
It happened.
Silverdale responds, he says, Mark, confrontation with death is a highly personal experience. And Mark replies, I feel kind of guilty that I can't help the Voyager as per teaching as much as I should be able to if I were really on the ball so far in this lifetime.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay.
We're going to thank you both for coming, for visiting.
Yes.
And for spending some time with us on the class tonight. And you're going to dry now, and I wish you great.
And I'm going to say one thing online here so that people can get the benefit of it.
Yeah,
like that? This way?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's not working.
I'm not going to use it. That'll work.
Also,
so,
nice to meet both of you in person via the video.
It was nice to meet both of you in person.
I agree.
Wonderful.
Likewise.
Okay, let him go. Let's say goodbye.
Saying goodbye. Yes.
We'll be in touch on that other project, okay? You want to turn these other mics off? Okay, we won't need that now.
Well, thank you and travel well.
Yeah? I am.
Yeah. So we don't have all of the technical stuff worked out yet, but this is a different...
Yes.
This is very different.
This is very cool, though, you know,
yeah.
Just to travel with a broader... wingspan.
Definitely a broader wingspan, and I guess I strongly encourage everybody to read through those testimonies there. And I know that Molly read through them recently and was very moved by them too. It's kind of, if you read them in a row, you're going to really get something about how, you know, it's the beginnings of testament. Now, here's the, I know that many of us have not done that yet, and part of the purpose of me presenting it early on in the class is because it's going to tell you something about yourself in this particular arena at the beginning of the study of the ABD.
Yes. It tells you something you actually want to know. It's like when you ask to get a passport because you know you're going to travel, they ask you information to present in order to get your passport. Then once you have your passport, then you start to travel and you present your passport when you go through each of the borders. It's the same kind of thing here. You are actually collecting the data that you have on your book of passage. You know, how are you traveling at the moment? What is it that you actually have as the collection that you would walk up to the border of death with at the moment? It's a very, very handy tool.
Yeah, and I'm not, and the idea is that we're doing it now when we don't know anything. And then we'll come back and look at it in a couple of months, and you'll revise it. You'll revise it because you're gonna say, oh.
Yeah.
So I say that the brave people have put it up now.
Yay!
Yes, and indeed, because they just stepped out there and said, here it is. I'm rolling the dice. And you're going to see some very, very, very interesting things. And Molly, you had a comment, and you said you read to him today. What was your comment again? She was blown away. They were really good. The details.
Writing retro.
It's nice.
That's a perfect way of describing. Yeah, I love it. Writing retro. Yes.
Maybe next time. Not this time, but maybe next time. In the full edition of the Tibetan Book of the Dead translation that the Dalai Lama did,
mm-hmm.
there's 6 or 7 other documents that they include with it, not just the Great Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardos, which is the one we're focusing on.
Yeah, the Bardo Chidol. Yeah.
But there's all forms of other things that are very, you don't hear as much. But a couple of them are having to do with the signs that you are dying.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of the commentary I read, this is in another volume, the writer says, you know, help the person recognize that they are dying.
Yes. Yes. Help them get the reality of where they are currently. That's one of the jobs of the reader.
So one of the jobs of the reader is to, and I think it was, somebody said, was it Mark Circa?
Yes.
Right here. The idea of the guide. And our job, in part, is to be the guide. And as we're working as a guide, because when I'm listening to Tamara talk about how she felt with her father, and my mind was thinking, yeah, how are you going to be at that time? How are you going to be? You know, have you developed your ability as a voyager? And my answer to myself, because this was all in my own little brain, okay.
Yes, self said.
And then I says to myself, self, I said, this is how you begin to help yourself.
Exactly.
By helping another. And when you go through the dynamic process, and we have, I don't know how some of the people that are in this room as readers, I do know how 2 people are who I consider experts at it because of other things in their lives,
mm-hmm.
and how they live their lives. We need to begin to incorporate it. And now when I read here in the ABD, this is page 44 on this edition, the 25th anniversary edition. I know it's a different page. I think it's a couple of pages shy. It's right after the paragraph that says third bounce white light that is in bold lettering. The next paragraph, and we did read this briefly, the real primate problem of primate existence is to train not the mind, but the essential self, the voyager, whose presence and attention survive after all ordinary forms and manifestations of consciousness have fragmented. So that's there, I mean, to me,
the challenge.
There it is in a nutshell, and that's the beginning of the answer to the question I posed about this relationship to the spouse and am I ready to die and things like that. Well, I'm not. I'm not. Because I know that there's so much more I need to deepen my understanding. And there's more work I can do. And I am doing that work. But I'm a intermediary. I'm a journeyman. I'm not a master craftsman.
So in that sentence, if I can just have the text for one moment, in that sentence, it says the real problem is to train. And it says to train is roughly equivalent to a cowboy who has never been exposed to anything but duck art and black velvet bar paintings of nude Mexican women suddenly coming face to face with a signed original Picasso at his most cubist. That says to me that the training is experiential only. There's nothing like the experience of getting a cubist Picasso put in your face. And it is the equivalent of a cowboy, as in, okay, yeah, I guess this is something I better start taking a look at. So training is something that we don't consider a necessary aspect in terms of dying, but the whole point is training.
Let's take another example. Let's say that you happen to be, Pat, an expert at baseball.
Sure.
And you've studied the game in great depth, and you understand the subtleties of play. And suddenly you're sitting there, and it's late in the game, and there's a runner on first and third. The infield is drawn in. It's two out, and the pitcher is behind on the batter. I, on the other hand, know nothing about baseball. I came because I just wanted to have, you know, spend the evening. You invited me to go see the ball game. You are the expert at it. I maintain that we are watching two fundamentally different games at that time. Because of your expertise at it, you can see it and understand it, and has a subtlety of excitement that, to me, I like the open air, the lights, the beer, the third beer was nice. Okay?
Okay.
So that, what I'm saying is that we then, because of the accumulation of knowledge, stand in a different place and have a fundamentally different experience with it. So the more time in grade that you put into this kind of work, you're slightly less surprised.
Yes, that's the use of the word training. It applies in every case. When you get into the ring, you hope that you have had a little training before the guy in the other corner starts coming towards you. You're in training when you get yourself, you know, the beginner's saddle, and you throw it over the side of the fence out there, and you learn how to at least put your foot in the lariat and swing your hip over so you can get on the seat. That's training. Training is every bit of every aspect that you can approach with deliberate
intention.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, it's intention.
Yes. Yes.
And the intention is based on standing inwardly in a different place. Because we are training, what did the sentence say again?
Not the mind, but
the essential self. And I've had conversations with one individual who's in the midst of a bunch of transit. It's life-challenging complexity right now. It's not life-threatening in a physical sense, but certainly complex. And learning how to stand in a different place, the person's starting to see it in a different manner.
And that's one of the most positive, helpful things that there is about getting a text like this to begin to approach from a different point of view, because it allows you to stand in relation to this issue from a different location, from a different place, from a different point of view. Basically, you get to stand in some different shoes for a moment or so in relation to what is this experience. Can I see it from another point of view?
Susan, how are we doing on the
comments?
We don't really have any more comments.
Okay. So based on some of those things, I strongly encourage everybody, to the extent that you would like to go ahead and write something down about the last hours of life and submit it, and we'll put it up, and it's just the declaration of where you are right now. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Because Pat brought that up earlier, that, you know, that Gail, for instance, was having this where she is right now, that's how it feels like you're going to be at that time. Okay, so then the problem is, can I stand in a different place? And fundamentally, the answer is yes, you can. Definitely you can, but each of it is such a particular study for each of us individually. You're born alone, right?
At this point.
Usually, well, not all the time. Sometimes one right after another. One at a time.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
If I may, just a slight tangent. Tamara and I had a conversation this morning, which I think is apropos. We were discussing how we have both been women truck owners. And the fact is that when you, as a woman, purchase or own a truck, or even if you just drive someone else's, when you step into the truck, you are taking on another persona, and has nothing to do with your knowledge of the truck, with truck driving itself, nothing at all. It's the fact that you get into that vehicle in your female form. It gives you the opportunity to have a completely different character for a while. Now, that's true with all the games that we've ever played. All of our online work has been, if you want to take on a different aspect, you can take on a different character. You can put yourself into a different role. You can get into a different vehicle. That's all we're talking about here, is actually taking a step outside of where you normally view, stand, see, act, etc., and get into a different one. And for us, we conferred this morning, definitely, yes. Female and truck, that's one for sure. Now, I think you could probably find one of those for everybody. I can't do the ones for the male, but I'm sure there is one. You know, I could guess them, but, I mean, it doesn't matter. Just pick one of those and recall the sensation of stepping out of yourself in any way at all. That's what you're looking for.
I'm going to go out tomorrow and buy one of those big highboy pickup trucks.
All right.
Yeah. I need one. whatever role you take on, let's say like you mentioned the games or Second Life that a lot of mm-hmm. people are playing now, you bring your body of habits to that.
Yes.
And part of the reason for these declarations is that you do indicate what your body of habits is. That's why we're afraid to write anything. We don't want anybody to see what our body habits. I hope mine is okay. I hope mine's actually better than everything. Well, maybe not better, but
you know,
at least
it's a form of confession that always has the aspect of pride, which is always in the way of actually putting anything down where it's going to be useful anyway. So the first step is to just go, hey, this is how it is for right now, no matter what, you know. And then let it float off on its way. Let it just, I'm actually recalling the three ones that I did in Spain. I ran this workshop, you know, weekend
yeah.
workshops, Last Hour of Life. I had a whole thing with all of it. And I'm remembering what I wrote then, you know, and that's like 12,
yeah.
14 years, 16 years ago. It's before the 2000s, so, you know, it's some time ago. And, you know, in relation to what I am holding now, the relationship to it hasn't changed that much. The what I'm holding has changed a little bit, but the how I'm holding, that hasn't changed very much. That's an interesting thing.
Did you say the how?
Yeah.
It hasn't.
Yeah. Mm-mm. No.
What you're holding.
Bit. Yeah, a little bit.
But,
you know, what's of interest or import or hook or whatever, that, yeah, some of that's modified a little bit. But the how I'm holding it, no.
And that's,
not at all.
And that tends to tell us what, it hints about certain bodies of habits that we have.
Definitely.
Okay. And there'll be crises that you get into. Those, from a human point of view, quite frankly, I don't care that much about. I mean, I don't want to be around when it's happening too much, but it's like, you know, I don't care that much. Like somebody wants me to go travel with them on this particular, go on a particular trip,
mm-hmm.
travel trip,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And, but every time I talk to this person, they're depressed.
Yeah. So you're not really looking forward to it.
I'm not that excited
no.
about it.
No.
It's like, you know. And so the point is that, what's the body of habits? Now, here we join together in friends. As friends, one way we can begin to weave together as a group is to do these tasks together.
Yes, yes, yes.
So if we can do that writing, you've got to read through some of these. I was quite moved by all of them, quite frankly. And Susan, she wrote hers out, put it up there, and she was all uncertain and stuff like that. And then she just kept going. She just kept going. None of it stopped her. And she put up a couple, two or three more, I think, right, Susan? I think there's four now.
Well, yeah, as I wrote it out, I became clearer on certain parts. And
yeah.
I looked at it differently.
Hmm.
And
so that effort in itself was the solution for her to go to the next level.
And that's the basis for all of us now. See, when some folks can walk outside of themselves to the extent that they can post it up for others to read, that's the basis for all of us to, you know, make this something that is a very strong foundation to view from. And that's, I think that's really important. You, You need a grounding to be able to view from, and this gives us a grounding all of us are able to use. Like Jana was mentioning, the detail, the willingness to expose the detail, that is so helpful. It is so genuinely helpful, and I'm delighted for all of us that we have those of us who have put it on there done so. It's very, very helpful for everybody.
Well, and I found that part of the reason I continued to write is because I read other posts and it made me realize other things, a different perspective. And so then I was able to incorporate that different perspective.
Right.
We do have a few comments.
Okay, go ahead.
Star said, I like the way Pat has introduced of writing the last hour in the hour that you happen to be in at the time you began to write.
Good.
Thank you.
Winnipeg 9 said, EJ had me lead a belly dancing class. With no warning or training, it was jarring. And Hawk Lady said that, yes, that helps a lot, Star. The comment by Pat.
Good.
Thank you.
So we're going to continue. We're going to read next week. We're going to read the last couple of pages of this first chapter here, the significant chapter, and then we're going to have an assignment about the next chapter. The next chapter, you know, is the six dimensions. I'm not quite sure how to approach that, but we're going to, at the end of the class tomorrow, next week, I'll give a suggestion that I have, but we'll see. A very specific suggestion. We'll go over it a little later.
Okay.
And then we're going to start to get into the actual first stages of the voyages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that at that point, we're going to dive in with both feet and with hip boots. So that'll be a different part of it. And our job, once again, is this idea of the real problem of primate existence. That's what we're in now, is to train not the mind, but the essential self, the voyager. The essential self is the voyager. And we begin to recognize that we're the voyager, and sometimes we wind up with other voyagers. And we found and can recognize these other voyagers. And we're delighted in a particular kind of friendship that is a friendship not based on bargaining.
A visitation of voyagers together in the same chamber is something to be joyful and grateful about.
Truthfully, it's a rare event. It's a rare event that, and so we've gathered together to do that, and that's part of the process that we're going through as well.
Yes, and I would also include for people who have moved along in this text up to this point, reading from the very frontispiece up to where we are now, to go back, if you feel like it, go back and read again the material that we covered the first 5 weeks and collect the information that you currently have. Collect up the information about what we have been reading from looking at the chats and hearing the logs and reading what's on the website and go back and read through it again. Put that all back in its context again. Enrich yourself with what we have been doing together and read through it again.
So that'll be a reorientation.
Yes.
And that's That's important. It's what we need to do. And we're going to keep reorienting for the next 4 or 5 months as we go through this next set of information. And we're going to, you know, Star Ananda is doing the actual Labyrinth Reader's Course. If that's correct, Star Ananda, just say so in the log that you are doing it and maybe a time that you're doing it. That's a different form of work on this material. And we're overlaying it almost more directly, which is cool.
Yeah. It's way cool.
Way cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else you got there, Susan?
Simon says, awesome collaborations, Pat. Thank you so much.
Excellent.
And then Star said, yes, that is correct.
Okay, good. Yeah, just put in there when you're doing it, and I know it's in Second Life.
David, I have a question, if that's a good time for
you. Perfect timing.
You said last week that when we deal with this immense amount of energy that occurs at death that we experience, that if we can maintain a certain clarity, a certain attention of our essential self, that opportunities will present themselves to us. And then you said something that I thought was extremely a big idea in just a few words. You said, even if we can take only one insight or realization with us, at this point of transition, it is there not only for ourselves, but for everyone. I would sure like someone to expand upon that, because I think that's a very big idea.
Let me give a little background to Pat. You weren't here last week, I don't think so. What we were talking about was the bounce. Okay. So what do we mean by the bounce? And I happen to be in a physical body right now, okay? So, and I don't believe that I remember my voyaging experience in a lot of detail. But I think I do. I think parts of me do remember parts of it. And what occurs, in my opinion, then, Harry, is, and I'm partly drawing from other voyaging experience I definitely have had, and that I can speak with. Sometimes we use that amount of energy to rise up to very, very lofty chambers. Now, in that chamber, when we touch that chamber, we may not have the wherewithal, the training, and the skill set to stay there. But think about it. I always think about this when I hear about these angels wrestling with people in the Bible. And I think there's something about that. No, you're never given you're never given more than you can handle, though it's an immense difficulty at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that means in part, Harry, that if you're able to go to that highest chamber, in a sense, then you've touched it and tasted it. Now, just because you're not a full-time resident there, that doesn't mean you can't bring a little teeny bit of that manna back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've brought it back, then in a certain way, and this is the, what's the third line in the Bodhisattva prayer? The truth cannot be told.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing here? And then the guy says, I vow to tell it.
Mm-hmm.
What boldness is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what boldness is that? The truth, big T, the real truth cannot be told, but I vow to tell it. How then can, what is this riddle that is posed there? Because that voyager says, I will, if I've gone there and I come back, I will show you the wares that I've come back with. I'll show you what's in my knapsack.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like the Major Arcana card, the Fool, because that's where he's been.
Yeah.
And he's come back with something in his little knapsack, Harry. So how then do we fulfill the project of serving mankind? We work on ourselves. And if we can just have one inch of progress, a micro inch of progress, then we have something to share with our fellows. That's where I was going with it. I don't know if it makes sense to you.
Oh, indeed. Thank you.
Do we recall what is the title of the book that has the Seamorg experience typed in it? Is that HVM? Which book is it? Life in the Labyrinth. Life in the Labyrinth premise is there is a life to be led in the existence of a human as well as out of existence, not in a human form. The Life in the Labyrinth Seamorg experience talks in detail about the higher chamber that is in this chamber, right behind your eyeballs, etc., all the metaphors you can think of, and how if there is that in your common presence, it is therefore available for all.
That's right.
So you carry it in you, and it is available for all. That is the definition of common presence.
So it's not a matter of you... Like, you achieving something has nothing to do with that.
It's not doing.
It's like you're gathering.
Yeah.
And you're doing it on behalf of our fellow voyagers.
And there's something about sharing that experience that deepens it.
Absolutely.
It did for me, anyway.
And I think part of the reason that that's true, Susan, is we're acknowledging at that moment, acknowledging that part of ourselves. We're not just saying, oh, I'm just a person. No, we're actually saying, I am a voyager. And what we're going to do, what we've been doing, is we're giving the voyager, in a sense, I don't know if I like this word, but the right to exist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to use okay because that's overused, but it is, it has a force of itself, it has an existence. We've already talked in great detail about awakening the machine and beginning to allow the essential self to grow. And now we're saying, we're out of the closet here.
Yes, it's acknowledgement.
We're acknowledging that our angelic self is in fact a real part of ourselves. And now our job is to develop it. Okay?
Thank you, David.
Okay.
Thank
great.
You.
Thanks, Gary.
So, Starananda came back and she said it's correct. The class is in the PVA on Sundays from 3 to 4 outside the Ganesh Temple in the Zen Ball meditation area.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for doing that. That's a lot of work. All right.
So, once again, go ahead, one more.
One more thing. We're talking about practicing and getting ready for our death. And there's another part, which is getting ready on a physical level and basically like wrapping up the affairs of the body and of the life experience.
Yep.
And that's a huge amount of work.
Yep. Indeed it is, my friend. Indeed it is.
And don't worry, we're not going to leave it unturned. We're turning that stone over.
Yeah.
It's in its own good time. We have that on the agenda.
Yeah, that'll be that'll most likely be something like a weekend class, and maybe it'll be 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
We'll have to do it.
Yeah.
You can't do it during the one-hour session in the middle of the night for some people. And the other thing, for some reason, I just want to mention one more thing. There will be symptoms as you start to don the robe of the Voyager. There'll be symptoms, and they'll be uncomfortable. I was talking to somebody via email today, and she was saying how her time is getting all confused. Mm-hmm. For some reason, she's not able to navigate time very well right now. Well, if anybody is really putting on the robe of the Voyager right now, I would say it's this individual. That's just part of what happens, that linearity becomes less part of your life, and something else, a different direction, begins to take place. I'm amazed at, well, I'll just say it. I'm amazed at the accuracy of EJ and accommodating spaces, and how, without saying anything, you just, you know, get to, oh, well, time, you know, it's time to go do this. I got to go now, which is the next space to open up. It's uncanny. That's the mode of time that he particularly works with. And I watch that very carefully as I watch him operate. So we'll find different things about ourselves when, as the machine becomes less of a guide for us and the Voyager begins to emerge, our life will become different too.
And thank you all for being with us on this journey together. We will be visiting with you online, and we will see you here again next time.
Good night.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, David. Good night.
Thanks, David and Pat.
Hey, thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you.